From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's going on, beautiful people? Welcome to another edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on this Thursday, October 9th. An exciting show in store for you all today. Hey, hockey is right around the corner for the Detroit Red Wings. We had, you know, I'm feeling the ice hockey love right now because we had Tom Anastas on yesterday's show to talk about the start of the MSU hockey season. But the Red Wings hit the ice tonight against the Boston Bruins. How about that, all you Red Wings fans out there? We'll have sort of a season preview for the Red Wings and also the Pistons as well. We'll also have an interesting guest on today's show. Now, his name is Coach Kevin Richards. He's one of the most successful high school basketball coaches in the entire state of Michigan. But hey, he's coming to Lansing. He actually coaches Grosse Pointe South, but he's come to Lansing to host a pretty cool and interesting coaches clinic that you definitely want to hear about. He'll be joining me around the 1:30 mark. We'll also have Throwback Thursday for you, talk a little Lions, and so much more. But hey, as custom here on the show, here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners brought to you by the one, the only, Andrew Hayes.
I'm Andrew Hayes, and here are your quick hit headliners for October 9th, 2014. Michigan State quarterback commit Brian Lewerke has been selected as a Marine Semper Fidelis All-American. He will be recognized before leading his team in its homecoming game on Friday night. Quote, "It will be great to showcase my talents and to make the fans and my future coaches at Michigan State proud," Lewerke said. Lewerke is coming off a 7-touchdown performance in last week's 63-29 win. The fourth annual Semper Fidelis All-American Bowl will take place January 4th, 2015 in Carson, California. Michigan State basketball missed out on 5-star recruit Henry Ellenson as the 6'10" high school senior committed to Marquette University, according to ESPN reports. Ellenson said, quote, "I felt Marquette was a place where I could make an immediate impact. I feel that I will have an opportunity to play multiple positions and show my versatility. Also, I was the most comfortable with the coaching staff, and a chance to play with my brother was something that was always big to me." Ellenson's final three were Michigan State, Kentucky, and Marquette. Matt Prater, the Lions' new kicker, said he hasn't had a drink in, quote, "over a month and a half" since he voluntarily entered rehab at his family's request. He has been in the league's substance abuse program since August 2011, when he was charged with driving under the influence of alcohol and leaving the scene of a crash. He was suspended for the first four games this season before being cut by the Broncos. Rashawn Mathis took an interception to the house Sunday. It was his first pick since tearing his ACL in 2011. He plans to give that ball to his son, even though he doesn't want his son to play football at his age because of the violence. Quote, "I don't want him to. He doesn't have to play any sport as far as I'm concerned, but if he does get into it, football will be the last thing I introduce him to. There's a lot of other sports you can play that gets your balance right and athleticism could be known. So I don't think I will allow him to play football before high school." Calvin Johnson and Reggie Bush will likely miss this week's game against the division rival Minnesota Vikings. Johnson is having trouble planting because of a high ankle sprain and has been limited to 3 catches and 19 yards in the past 2 weeks. Reggie Bush is also having troubles with his ankle, but the Lions don't have to rush him back since they are getting Joique Bell and Theo Riddick back this week. The Detroit Red Wings begin their quest for a 24th consecutive playoff appearance tonight as the team welcomes the Boston Bruins to the Joe. Puck drop is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. The NHL regular season kicked off last night with 4 games, including a 4-0 drubbing of the Los Angeles Kings by the San Jose Sharks. Sharks goaltender Antti Niemi recorded 34 saves in the shutout. A pretrial hearing on domestic assault and other charges filed against Charlotte Hornets forward Jeffrey Taylor was adjourned yesterday for 3 weeks. Taylor is accused of assaulting his girlfriend, who is a Michigan State student, as well as an employee of the Marriott Hotel in East Lansing on September 25th. Court documents allege Taylor also caused between $200 and $1,000 in damage to hotel property. Taylor faces up to a year in jail and has pleaded not guilty. The forward's defense attorney, Harold Freed, said Taylor is free to travel outside of Michigan. He said Taylor will be present when the pretrial hearing resumes on October 29th. Four players were suspended and two were fined today following an on-court incident last night in an exhibition game between the Washington Wizards and the Chicago Bulls. Wizards players DeJuan Blair, Nene, Daniel Orton, and Xavier Silas will all miss the first game of the regular season after they left the bench to break up a tussle between Chicago's Joakim Noah and Washington's Paul Pierce. Noah and Pierce were each fined $15,000. Finally, week 6 in the NFL kicks off tonight with the Indianapolis Colts taking on the Houston Texans. In 5 games against the Colts, Texans running back Arian Foster has averaged over 150 yards per game. Game time is scheduled for 8:25. Those are your quick hit headliners for October 9th. Now back to Al to start the show. Phone lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. Appreciate that. As you just stated, our phone lines are open and will be open this entire hour. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we talk about on today's show, you can call 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Also go to Facebook.com and leave a comment there on our social media page of Facebook, and also even tweet us at AlMartinWKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. And we'll read your tweets or comments right here on the air. But a fantastic show in store for you. I mean, as I said at the beginning of the hour, there's a pretty cool and interesting basketball clinic that will be taking place starting tomorrow. Tomorrow and Saturday. So Friday and Saturday, this will be going on. And it's really different. It's really different. You don't want to miss it, folks, because this is not just your typical basketball clinic where you get inspired and hear, you know, from a coach and I guess kind of pick apart his techniques as to why that coach has been successful. But this dives into a different area that really speaks to how things are kind of changing, not in just our society, but in the world of sports year by year by year. I don't want to get too specific as to what I mean by that just now, because I'm going to let our guest explain. But just as a tease, you don't want to miss this interview, okay, folks? Again, he's Coach Kevin Richards. He's the head coach of Grosse Pointe South High School. He's the head boys basketball coach there and has had some unbelievable success there. I mean, just wait till you hear his track record, okay? But he's the MC for that event. So Kevin will join me on the show to talk about an interesting area of high school basketball coaching and why he decided to, you know, be the MC of this event. It's really cool stuff. You don't want to miss that. Later on, it's also Thursday. We'll also bring you Throwback Thursday, where we take a look at what happened on this Thursday in sports history. We have a few cool ones for you. And also, you know, we continue our discussion in many different areas. So, again, our phone lines will be open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Alex Sharg now joins me here on the show. How you doing, Alex?
Pretty good, man. I mean, we were just talking back here that the Freddie Flintstone comparisons are flying off the shelves for Brady Hoke. We're hearing just more gossip every day.
Freddie Flintstone. I've never heard of that. I haven't enlightened me.
Apparently, Brady Hoke reminds some callers of Freddie Flintstone.
I can see that.
And one caller said that for Halloween, he's going to be Freddie Flintstone in wake of Brady Hoke.
We just had a caller just say that?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, the Brady Hoke bashing just continues.
Yeah.
Day after day after day. My goodness. But I can see the Freddie Flintstone comparisons, though. He does kind of remind me of Fred Flintstone.
Yeah, we should do that one day. That's pretty funny. Player lookalikes.
That is a good one.
Kyle Korver, Ashton Kutcher. You know, there are a lot of different lookalikes.
I'm going to jot that down. Player lookalikes. Yeah. That would be kind of a fun segment to do. It's a good idea.
Remember
Alex?
Sam Cassell? He kind of looked like an alien.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. My homie Carl used to bash on Sam Cassell all the time. He used to call him E.T.
E.T., that's right.
E.T. all the time, yeah. Interesting stuff. I'm going to jot that down. That's a very interesting segment idea right there, Alex. Look at that. All right, but how you doing anyway, though, man? Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. We got past hump day, and I can't believe how quickly Red Wings and Pistons are starting. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It just seemed like The Red Wings were just having training camp with their prospects.
I'm still trying to get used to this weather. I can't believe that summer is gone already. I mean, the summer flew by, and again, as you just alluded to, the Red Wings, they start their season tonight. The Pistons held their first exhibition game of the year on Tuesday. I mean, so much is happening right now. This is certainly a busy time in sports for all of us, especially us media members.
And can you believe
what's
coming out of these New Jersey hazing high school football scandals?
Yeah,
right,
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
I mean, it's
though.
Gross. It's grotesque.
It's crazy. You know what? You know, speaking about you know stories that are really hot button topics. You know, I was of course it was Wednesdays are long days for me. You know, I come here do the radio show, and I have to prep for the TV show, which starts at 6:00. It was a great sit down, of course, with Trevor Manuel and his father James. His grandmother also showed up along with his mom. Fantastic family. I gotta love the Manuals. They are outstanding people. But they came out, you know, yesterday. I did the TV show, sat down with James and Trevor. Great episode. And I get home, you know, it's late at night, and I'm like, man, you know what? I actually forgot that I had set my DVR to record the newest ESPN 30 for 30 documentary. Now, I don't know if you saw it. It's called Playing for the Mob.
I saw you putting it on Facebook last night.
Yeah.
I saw your hashtag.
I mean, I sat down and watched it, did not know what this story was about at all. Didn't even really hear about this story, seeing as though, I mean, it took place back in 1978. But have you seen the movie Goodfellas?
I have seen Goodfellas.
You've seen Goodfellas. So, basically, this story of Playing for the Mob is about basically, the characters from Goodfellas, because you know that's a true story.
Right.
It's
right.
The real characters. So you're talking about, you know, the main character, Henry Hill, in that movie, played by Ray Liotta in the 1990 Martin Scorsese classic Goodfellas. It takes this true story, and a lot of people don't know that the other layer to that story, and which is really the big reason why they got busted, was because of the 1978 first point shaving scandal with the Boston College men's basketball team. And it kind of breaks down how it happened. I mean, it's really interesting stuff, man. It's gangster. I put it
cool.
That way. It's pretty gangster, okay? But check it out. It definitely became one of my favorite 30 for 30s after watching it last night. Interesting stuff. But I did not know that was the first point shaving scandal, and it kind of took you back and highlighted it. The director, Joe Levine, did an unbelievable job of sort of retracking, you know, and sitting down and getting these people to talk about this moment. I mean, it's unbelievable. But Henry Hill, he actually passed away due to a heart attack. I believe it was this summer or the summer of last year, one of these summers that are recent. And, you know, they got him on camera, though, to talk about, I mean, how he went about this whole thing. But it's interesting stuff. It involves three basketball players for that BC boy men's basketball team that were involved and were getting money to shave points. Crazy stuff, though. If you haven't seen it, check it out, though, folks. But you know, in light of that, and talking about Vegas, because you know how point shaving goes. I mean, Vegas comes out with these odds, right? And if you're favored by a certain number, in order to, I guess, you know, with these players, different basketball team, if they were those who were involved with this scandal, if let's say BC was favored by 6 points, right? And let's say, you know, Henry Hill and his mob squad, you know, they would choose the other team. They would go the under route. So they would basically say, okay, we're going to choose Vanderbilt to beat you guys. And well, not to beat you guys. You guys have to win the game. But if you're favored by 6 points, we're going to take the under, and you guys have to win, by six or less points. So these players will go out there knowing that and sort of adhere to or try to adhere to what these mobsters wanted. Now, Vegas puts out these odds left and right, and this is kind of a cool segue into our first topic because Vegas also has predicted some interesting odds for the MSU football team. Now, not to say that the MSU football team is involved in point shaving here. I just thought that'd be kind of a cool segue because we're talking about Vegas here. But Michigan State actually has the third best odds to win the college football national championship this season. Can you believe that? I mean, was that surprising you? I was like, that really threw me for a loop.
Yeah, no, I think it was. But what was most surprising, and this is in wake of the SEC dominance and the recent wins with Mississippi State and the recent wins with Ole Miss. And as much as these odds hold true recently, college football, the odds makers at, what is it, Bovada or whatever it is, they must have some kind of hunch that Ole Miss and Mississippi State might be losing soon. You know what I mean? I mean, they're number 3-4. They're undefeated. They just beat the best teams in the SEC.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I don't understand that as much as Michigan State's still up there, this is coming out so recently. I mean, if this was at the beginning of the year, okay, sure, makes sense. But in wake of the fifth or sixth week, it's surprising. Well, it's really surprising.
Well, the big reason why is because how many upsets did we see on Saturday? You know, MSU was, you know, really among one of the few teams in the top ten to sort of salvage and pull out a game. Yeah.
But as much as there were upsets, Al, there are still six or seven, I think maybe eight, undefeated teams still out there.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
And a lot of them, those undefeated teams, it's not like you're talking about ECU or all these smaller schools out of the MACs. These are Ole Miss. These are big power conference schools out of the major Big 12, SEC, and Pac-10. I mean, these are good teams.
Yeah, you know, looking at it, the Spartans right now, they are listed as 8-1 odds to hoist the coveted Crystal Football, okay? Now, that's tied with Georgia and trailing only Florida State and Auburn. Can you believe that? Now, you know, MSU is ahead of teams like Alabama, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Ohio State, and the only team to beat it this season, Oregon, as well. So, hey, how about interesting stuff. Now, when looking at this, though, when it comes down to it, I mean, this really was the subject, the prime subject of Mark D'Antonio's Tuesday morning presser. I mean, D'Antonio, he talked about, you know, playoff strength and whether or not his team will make the playoff. He talked about it for at least 10 minutes on Tuesday. I mean, it was one of the primetime subjects. And, you know, when looking at it, I mean, there's a lot of layers to this conversation. And it's so crazy that we're talking about this so early. And, again, it was really surprising to me because there are so many other teams out there that you can make a case for that deserve that could, you know, I could see in the playoff right now. Looking at it, I mean, you got Florida State. They're undefeated at 5-0. How about Auburn in the SEC at 5-0 as well? Baylor 5-0. Ole Miss. There's a lot of different teams out there that you can make. How about Notre Dame? Notre Dame is also undefeated at 5-0.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with all of those upsets, you know, taking place on Saturday, I think it kind of, you know, peeled back, you know, some of the shade on MSU. I've been seeing as though they did top Nebraska. They did win that game. Now, when looking at it, though, I think, because and it's so crazy that we have just 3 weeks now before the selection committee sits down and starts to evaluate things. But when looking at overall, you know, who deserves to be in this in the four-team playoff, I mean, first off, I want to get your thoughts and predictions on this, Alex, because definitely conference strength is one of the components that I'm sure the committee is going to take in consideration, without a doubt. Now, if you look at that, I mean, I think, are we both in agreement that the SEC is definitely the best conference in college football?
I think we can agree that they'll have at least two teams.
You think they'll have at least two?
I think they'll have at least two.
Okay, saying two is a bit of a, some people would say that's a bit of a stretch, but I can see your argument there because I believe the SEC is the best conference.
Look at the
in
top 10
football.
Standings.
Well, yeah, exactly. Now, looking at it, though, I mean, a lot of people feel as though that the Pac-12 can make a case as well. A lot of people feel as though the Pac-12 is that conference, that next conference, the second best conference in all of college football.
And that's why I have to disagree. And I talked about it when you actually were not on the air on, I think it's two Fridays ago. Andrew Hayes here in the studio today, him and I were talking on the air on Friday about how bad the Pac-12 looked when UCLA played against Arizona State. Sure, Rich Rodriguez is turning that Arizona program into a winner. They're number 10. But, I mean, they have a long way to go. There are still many question marks with that team.
So if the Pac-12 isn't your second best conference, because I believe, you know,
right.
SEC certainly, whoever wins the SEC, yeah, they'll probably be in the college playoff. I think that I'm pretty much 80% sure on that. 80%, I'm giving myself that 20% leeway. What's the second best conference?
I think it's got to be the Big 12.
You think so?
I think it has to
and
be the Big 12.
And why is that?
I mean, you look at the Big 12, I know you're not a guy for recruiting, but if you look at the recruits they have that are performing now, they have a lot of playmakers. I mean, look at all the guys that typically get drafted. You'll see a lot more draftees out of the Big 12 than you will see the Pac-12. And as well, I mean, if you look at Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, you look at some. Missouri, they had a bad loss.
What about the ACC though? I mean, Florida State. You got Florida State there. Florida State's leading that conference, but
Are you
really that sold on Baylor?
I mean, aside from Florida State, who else do you have?
But are you really that sold on Baylor, though, coming out of the Big 12, though?
I mean, I'd say Oklahoma if I had to pick one.
Interesting. That's interesting stuff there. Because me, I'm kind of not – I don't know. I'm completely honest with you guys. I don't know who that second-best conference
aside from Florida,
in college football
I mean, at
right
least
now.
Aside from Florida State, I mean, at least the Big 12 has several teams that are competitive. I mean, Florida State is basically running the table on that conference.
Yeah, I mean, they're 5-0 in the conference, certainly. Louisville is not bad. Louisville is certainly not bad. Looking at you know, the Pac-12 as well.
But look at their schedule. They haven't played any great teams.
Yeah, and you could also argue that as well. I think, personally, for me, it's sort of up in the air for me, because you can make cases for two or three other conferences who could definitely make it. You can make a legit argument as that second best conference in college football. Is the Big Ten one of them? That's what it comes down to. That's what it certainly comes down to if you're going to make a case for Michigan State. Because with Michigan, that's why it was so surprising for me. And we've talked about the Big 12. We just talked about the ACC. We talked about, you know, the Pac-12. I haven't said the Big Ten yet. For me, I don't know. I just do not know.
I don't know.
Because it's so up in the air when it comes to that discussion. And MSU's quality opponent other than Oregon, who is it?
Right.
Ohio State?
And that's hoping that Ohio State wins out, and when the time it gets there down the road at the end of the season, Ohio State's on the top 15.
Right. Other than Oregon, I mean, it's got to be Ohio State or Nebraska, I'm thinking. You know what I mean? And how much of a case can you make for those two teams?
But that's the thing. It'd be different if Nebraska played any good teams as well. If Nebraska knocked off in the in the out-of-conference schedule, if they knocked off an SEC team, or if they played a Big 12 team or a Pac-12 team, it would be different.
You can make a case, though, that, I mean, Nebraska was, you know, ranked in the top 25, and they were undefeated coming into that Michigan State game. I mean, you can make a case for that, but who knows? I mean, Ohio State and Nebraska, I mean, that's not making a big case for as far as strength of schedule goes for MSU if they do win the Big Ten.
The other part that's often ignored is actually their individual conference playoff. I mean, the Big Ten championship, the Big 12 championship.
Right.
You might be a one-loss or undefeated team. You might lose in that championship, and that might flip it upside down. So if one of these SC teams is undefeated, they lose a tough game at the end of the year, and then they lose their conference playoff, that could also hoist Michigan State into that playoff contention.
Certainly. And looking at all of these conferences, I mean, I think you can make a case for definitely the Pac-12 to be arguably the second best conference in the nation. I don't know. But when you have stuff like this, when you have USC, you know, losing to Boston College, I mean, that's another thing. I mean, looking at the overall conference, the committee, I don't know who my top four teams are right now. I mean, it is so crazy right now, especially with Saturday. Saturday just made, I mean, it was chaos.
Yeah.
Saturday was so much chaos going on. I don't know who my top four teams are. If you had to choose right now, who would be in your playoff? Who would be in Alex Sharks' playoff?
Man, I mean, at the end of the year, I think eventually you'll have two SEC teams. My guess, I say you get Auburn in there. Another team, I'd say probably Bama will sneak in. Mm-hmm. That Auburn-Bama.
Bama will still sneak in?
I think
so.
I mean, as much as they have,
I don't know. I don't even know about Bama.
Really?
No, seeing that they're lost to Mississippi on Saturday. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you hear the Bama fans that called in to Paul Feinbaum's radio show?
No,
did you
I
hear
didn't.
About that?
No, I mean, I didn't hear that.
Bama Nation. I mean, they're one loss. You know, you think of great powerhouse dynasties.
Yeah.
One loss. Okay, it's a game. Michigan State lost to Oregon. Michigan State fans have moved on from that.
But
lost to
Bama
Notre Dame.
Doesn't lose. That's the thing about Bama.
Right. So when Bama loses, I mean, you're burning papers. I mean, there are riots going on. You could see callers calling into Paul Feinbaum shows that are raging.
Right.
I mean,
I even saw stuff about, you know, people possibly calling for Saban's job.
Yeah.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Right. Are you serious? At the end of the day, Ole Miss is just a better team. I actually caught that game, too. I've said, hey, I had a strong feeling that Ole Miss was going to top Alabama. And I got lucky. I guess you call it
that
luck.
That was a good call. But I think Bama-Auburn.
But yeah.
You probably figure Florida State as much as Jameis Winston can stay on the field. And I hate to say it, but I think Oklahoma is going to squeeze in there.
You think so still?
I don't see any Big Ten team making it. They made no case. There couldn't be any out-of-conference
teams. That's what I'm saying. With the conference, the overall conference for MSU, I'm still just not so. That's why it's so surprising. Folks, what do you think? What do you think about with the playoff fiasco? Will Michigan State get to that 4-team playoff? What do you think? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We'll take your calls live on the air. All right, let's transition now, Alex. How about those Red Wings, huh? The Red Wings season starts officially tonight against the Boston Bruins. Hockey Town is going to go crazy. Everybody's been waiting for this for quite some time. Just to kind of give folks, a season preview, if you will, because there are many out there that you know, feel as though the Red Wings, they think that streak may be snapped as far as the 23rd.
And they thought it last year.
I mean, for me personally, I think the Wings certainly, I think they'll do it. I don't know. For me, looking at kind of turning the dial back and looking at last season, I think that the progression of the young players getting all of that playing time due to all of the injuries that the Red Wings had last season. I mean, they were certainly a beat-up team last year, and they got to stay healthy this season. They have to stay healthy. That has to be one of the prime components to this team. Looking at their two stars, the two, you know, the straws to stir the drink, I guess you could say, Zetterberg and Datsyuk. I mean, they missed 37 games last year. 37 games for that team, that Red Wings squad last year. They have to stay healthy. This overall team has to stay healthy. But when looking at last season, seeing as though you had all these injuries, you had these young players having to step into roles that they weren't accustomed to, trying to getting that game experience, that, you know, trying to fill that void from players who normally had that void already filled. And I think the progression of those young players, especially guys like Nyquist and Tartar. Hey, Nyquist was one of the hottest guys in all of NHL last year. Nyquist was great. And I think he was going to be an emerging star for this year as well. I think that was valuable. I think that experience was definitely invaluable to this team. And I think they'll be okay, Alex.
Yeah, so as much as injuries were a concern, for me, it's passing the baton. I mean, you look at the great Red Wing dynasties from the 90s to the early 2000s. When Fedorov got traded, you had guys step up. When Yzerman retired, you had guys step up. When Shanahan left, you had players step up. When Lidstrom left, you really haven't seen anyone recently in this last 2 to 3 years that have stepped up from the Wings. Sure, Nyquist looks to be an emerging star, but we didn't see it in the playoffs. We're not sure if he's going to continue it this year. You look at some of the younger guys. I mean, Anthony Mantha, first-round pick, he was supposed to be a great star. Then he gets injured, so now he's out. You look at Andres Nastrogiel coming in, another younger player that hasn't had a game of NHL experience. That might be a guy that can lead the Red Wings and really take a role, but I just haven't seen anyone that has grabbed that baton and has led the Red Wings forward in this new dynasty era.
Well,
so,
we'll definitely see. I mean, I think the guys in Zetterberg and Datsyuk, I mean, they certainly, though. I mean,
Datsyuk's not even playing.
And that's the thing. He's on the shelf right now. But he said, I don't know if you watched his presser, but I definitely watched his presser last night in preparation for this discussion. And, hey, he feels great. It's a minor injury. This isn't anything big that is going to keep him out, you know, a bunch of games here. It's him and Zetterberg feel great. They said, hey, they feel just about 100% coming into this new season. So those two, definitely, that's great and all, but they have to stay healthy. I mean, those two guys are key components. When you talk about that leadership, I think you find it in those two components with those two players. But, you know, and looking at it, you know, when I talk about that experience, I mean, this team has 23 players back from last year's team. 10 who have been in Detroit for, you know, the last 5 playoff berths. So, hey, you know, you got when you have an instrumental core like that coming back for another year, chemistry certainly has a lot to do with this as well. And looking at that statistic alone, hey, it leaves me to say, you know, I can't bash anything as far as these players finding that chemistry and playing with one another. 23 players back, that's a big chunk of that roster. That's great.
But at the end of the day, Al, the biggest problem that the Red Wings had was they couldn't lure any of the top money, top free agents
in last year's
market. And how do you not go to a team that's made it 22 years in a row?
Yeah, and I kind of, that says a lot. Maybe the culture is kind of changing.
Right.
The overall perception is changing for Red Wings.
But that's probably one of the reasons why the Red Wings have been so successful in the last decade is because every year they make a run at the Cup, they have really good playmakers in the offseason that sign on.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the early 2000s, look at how big the additions with Hull, Luke Robitaille, look at the additions that they've had that have made them these great Stanley Cup runs. They haven't had that recently.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's a big concern, and they're putting a lot of trust into these younger players coming up from the Grand Rapids Griffins. I'm not so sold on it.
Yeah, but now they have no choice. They have no choice now. The season's starting. You got this young core. And again, I think the experience a lot of them got last year is going to be great. And also the other component to this whole thing, I think Jimmy Howard had the worst season of his career last year. Other than last year, I mean, if you look at the past 5 seasons before that, he's been in the top 10 goalies in the league.
But Al, Peter Mrazek's waiting in the rings. Like I said, they're trusting a lot of these younger prospects to wait and kind of wait their turn and step up.
Exactly. But I think Jimmy Howard's going to have a good season this year, Alex. I think coming off last year was an odd year for Jimmy. It was an odd year when you had all these young players. I mean, they weren't as – and this is the thing. I remember having countless rants about how they lacked aggressiveness throughout games and how they just weren't aggressive. And with that being said, other teams would take advantage of that. And Jimmy Howard was – I mean, he was being suffocated game after game after game. And eventually, you know, hey, pucks are going to find the back of the net if he's constantly being fired upon. Jimmy Howard is going to rebound, I think. Again, other than last year statistically being his worst year of his career, he's been one of the top 10 goalies in the NHL. I think he rebounds and the Red Wings are going to be fine. How the progression, though, that experience and progression of these young Bucks is going to be key, though. Let's hit the break. When we come back, we'll invite our guest for today's Current Sports. He is one of the top high school boys basketball coaches in the state of Michigan. You don't want to miss our chat. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, folks, want to remind you all that tonight is the night. Yes, each and every Thursday night, Current Sports TV airs on WKAR-TV. I'll be sitting down with Trevor Manuel and his dad, James Manuel. This is the first time in Current Sports TV history. That's right, we're setting records here, folks. The first time we've had not one, but two guests on the show at the same time. How about that? And I tell you what, I mean, sitting down with Trevor and James, I mean, first off, I mean, what really stood out to me during our sit down is just how close those two are. I mean, James and Trevor, I mean, man, they are just the typical, I mean, the closest father and son of combo I've ever seen in my life. I mean, they are, I tell you what, James has done an unbelievable job raising Trevor into a classy young man, because Trevor is actually going to make an announcement on Current Sports. It hasn't been released by anybody, so it's kind of a Current Sports TV exclusive, if you will. How about that? He has an unbelievable endeavor that is really going to make you, I guess, you know, stand on your feet and applaud, because I've never seen a young man, a high school kid at that, do something like this and kind of take this whole thing by the wheels. It's unbelievable stuff. You want to hear about it, and you're also going to want to hear how you can get involved. It's great stuff. Again, you can catch it tonight on WKAR-TV at 10 p.m. 10 p.m., folks. You do not want to miss it. We'll also have part two of my chat with Magic Johnson. You also get to see highlights from the MSU and U of M volleyball game and hear from Kathy George. And I even did the honorary coin toss at the Mid-States East tournament game for the Capital City Stealth as they took on the Michigan Renegades. So you get to see all of that and so much more. Again, catch Current Sports TV with my guest, Trevor Manuel, and his father, James, tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Well, let's get to our guest for today's radio show, folks. Now, I'm very excited about this interview. I can't wait to get to it. Now, starting tomorrow, high school coaches from across Michigan will be in Lansing for the annual Basketball Coaches Association of Michigan Clinic. Now, while at the Best Western Hotel Convention Center, the coaches will have the opportunity to learn from top innovators in basketball training, which is the Crossover Team. Now, Crossover is hosting a hospitality evening for the coaches in the Convention Center ballroom, where coaches will have the opportunity to learn more about the ways technology can be used in sports. Now, the MC for the clinic joins us today, Coach Kevin Richards. Kevin is a high school basketball coach at Grosse Pointe South. Kevin, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Now, first off, you know, I mentioned Crossover in that intro. You know, it's hosting a hospitality evening for the coaches in the convention center. Technology in sports, specifically in the game of basketball. First off, what is Crossover, and how did you get involved?
You know, actually, you know, Crossover is a tool, you know, coaches use to, you know, break down film, you know, watch, you know, previous games, use it for scouting. There's also a lot of numbers that go into it. I guess everything now is with focusing towards analytics, and it's been a helpful tool for our program.
Now, you know, looking at, you know, diving into what, you know, what exactly this thing does, I mean, the service provides detailed film breakdown, including advanced statistics,
yeah,
and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, how is it able to do that?
Well, basically, you know, we have someone that films the games, and then he takes the games and uploads it right to Crossover. You know, within the next day at practice, we have, you know, the film from previous night broken down. Obviously, the nice thing, it's saved me a lot of time as far as before I used to cut the clips myself, mm-hmm. edit it, put it on a DVD. I mean, it would take me, 3 to 4 hours, throughout the day coming into work early. So it's definitely cut down on a lot of that. It's, allowed me to be more specific as far as showing players specific plays or specific players. It's been a great tool for scouting as far as who we're going to play. You know, the kids can go on and look for a specific player that, they might be guarding. And it really allows us to break film down as far as plays. We can tag a play to make sure. And then, it's drawn up in their scouting report, and then they can see it on paper, but they can also go to that particular play to see it live. So it's been a great tool for us.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, with crossover, I mean, who are shooting these games, and how is that information compiled? Do they do it by themselves? I mean, does crossover provide all of this?
Yes.
Okay, they do that. I mean, so how does it work? I mean, for your program, how many guys are shooting games, and do you tell them what to break down, and so that you can?
No, they have they have all that already taken care of. Shots attempted, field goal percentage. 3-point field. I mean, they have everything, percentage, transition points, points off of steals. So you can be pretty, you can get really specific. The nice thing is too, what you can do is you can mark and write actually on the clips. So if someone was supposed to be running back to the paint and they're stopping at the 3-point line, you can put a tag in there. So when you're watching film, and you can actually write on the screen. And so that was something that we started doing towards the end of the year. So each year we've gotten a little more in depth about, as far as the capabilities of the program.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So how many people film and break down this type of stuff on a game to game basis?
Well, we just have one we have one company that films our games, and then like I said, he's great. He does a great job, and it kind of allows me to just he kind of takes care of all that, and then they send it. I have no idea how many people are doing it for crossover, but I've seen advertisements and for people that like the game of basketball and want to break it down, and so. I'm sure that, there's probably a lot of people out there that are participating.
Wow, that's pretty cool stuff. Now, how fast is crossover growing, not only in the high school ranks, but, in other ranks as well? Is this being used in college basketball as well?
I believe so. I think, a lot of the colleges are using it, and I think, more and more high schools, I mean, everyone's looking for edge and so I think it's definitely growing.
And even in the Cleveland Cavaliers, I'm looking here, right?
is that right? I read too. I thought Kentucky and but yeah, that's pretty wild.
Even LeBron, folks. Even LeBron, I tell you. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with the head boys basketball coach over at
Girls
Coach. I'm sorry, for Grosse Pointe South High School, Kevin Richards. Now, Kevin, I mean, looking at your coaching record, I mean, 15 years as a varsity coach, 2012 Class A BCAM Coach of the Year, 2012 Detroit News Dream Team Coach of the Year, 6 straight MAC League Championships, a back-to-back Class A finalist in 2012 and 13. I mean, and you, looking at crossover, combining this with this unbelievable use of technology, I mean, you've been 72-8 since using crossover. How did crossover change your program?
I just think, like I said, obviously, crossover's been a big help. I think we've been lucky. We've had some good players as well. But, I think the kids really started to get serious. And I think that they see when, we're using products such as crossover and some other things that we do, they know that we're putting the time in, and that they maybe get a little more serious themselves. And like I said, if I had to guess, I'd say it probably gives us a 10-point advantage every game, I think.
A 10-point advantage every time you guys step on the court. Wow. That's unbelievable. Now, because you're going to be the MC of this, of course, the clinic that's taking place starting tomorrow and Saturday. I mean, are you seeing other high school coaches that you compete against starting to, you know, buy in and start to use this use of technology?
Yeah, there's a number that, you know, that I know use it. And, you know, like I said, I definitely think, you know, like you said, with the Cleveland Cavaliers using it, and, you know, and I definitely think, you know, more people are becoming aware of it.
When you talk about the clinic, I mean, what's the big thing you want to, I guess you can say, convey to your fellow coaches from around the area?
Just the opportunities out there, and you know that, you know, in order to, I think, be successful, you have to, you know, you have to use tools like this now, you know, to be successful.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Now, for you, you know, Kevin, I just kind of rattled off your, you know, unbelievable resume. I mean, how did you get involved with high school basketball coaching and why?
You know, I started out, I played at a junior college, ended up going to Central Michigan, ended up getting in coaching right away while I was going to Central Michigan at Coleman High School. I coached the JV. I was assistant in varsity 1 year, and then I was JV boys and varsity girls. So I started varsity girls when I was 21 years old, and but I've just been coaching ever since. So
now, with the success you've had, I mean, have you ever thought about moving up? Probably coaching colleges.
You know, I definitely thought of it. You know, it definitely have to be something, you know, with the right fit. I have a very big family. We're four young kids with another one on the way any moment now. So
yeah,
a couple weeks. So,
oh man, that's great.
Know, yeah, so you know, I really enjoy, you know, spending time and coaching them as well. So we have a very busy winter. Yeah,
gotta love that, Kim. I totally understand it. That's great stuff. Now, you know, when helping out with a clinic like this, a coach's clinic like this, I mean, you're basically kind of, you know, introducing coaches to a tool that you use in your success in winning. I mean, there's also a competitive thing here. I mean, I know you love winning. What coach doesn't, right? So why help out other coaches? It's kind of like a neat fraternity where you kind of want to be on. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just think it's, you know, like I said, when this is a great weekend, you know, it's always, you know, I think the majority of the coaches, you know, are, you know, servants of the game and really want to help other people be successful as well. You know, I guess the old coaching mantra, you know, if it works, you know, steal it. You know, if you can get a baseline right out of bounds from someone, if you can get a set from someone and put your own wrinkle to it, then, you know, I think that just goes with, you know, anything. You know, I just think, you know, we all like to help each other and be successful. And so anything I can do to help people, you know, and I think that's, you know, goes along with, that's why we have, you know, the clinic is to help other people, other coaches.
Right. Know? Yeah, definitely. And the win, if you do beat, you know, another team, and knowing that this other team maybe also has crossover, I mean, hey, it's got to feel a little better, right? Seeing as though that, hey, you know, we're kind of on an even playing field here.
right, exactly.
Got to love that. All right, well, there you have it. Again, Kevin, can you remind, if there's a coach from around here in mid-Michigan listening right now who are interested in crossover and want to know more information about it, how can they do so?
I would just go on crossover.com and, you know, look up, you know, there's lots of testimonials on there and, you know, like I said, it's helped our program a tremendous amount. And, you know, like I said, I would definitely, you know, recommend it to anybody who's, you know, interested in, you know, improving their program.
All right. Well, there you have it. Head girls basketball coach over at Grosse Pointe South and MC of the annual Basketball Coaches Association of Michigan Clinic taking place this weekend. Kevin, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yep. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Again, Kevin Richards, got to love that, man. That's interesting. Interesting stuff when you talk about technology. I mean, technology is just changing sports in so many ways. Oh, boy, you can't even fathom it sometimes. All right, let's hit the second break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Pistons, Tigers, bringing you Throwback Thursday, all of that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this October 9th. How about we get to Throwback Thursday, huh, Alex? 15 minutes left in the show. Each and every Thursday, you guys know what we like to do. We like to take a trip back in time. That's right, go into our Current Sports time machine and take a look at some of the biggest moments in sports history that take place on Thursdays. So let's take place. Let's look back at what took place on October 9th in sports history. Here it is, Throwback Thursday here on Current Sports.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step into the slot for Brown. Shoots. Yes.
All right, it's Throwback Thursday, where we take a look at what happened on each and every Thursday here on Current Sports. Today is Thursday, October 9th, so let's see what happened. In 1919, the Cincinnati Reds won the World Series. The win would later be tainted when 8 Chicago White Sox were charged with throwing the game. Now, the incident became known as the Black Sox Scandal. How about that? Interesting stuff there. And, you know, it's kind of ironic to seeing as though I brought up the 1978 Boston College point shaving scandal that took place that was, you know, documented by ESPN's 30 for 30. So, man, a lot of scandals in sports, I tell you. All right, 1974, the Washington Capitals play their first NHL game. So an historic moment for them. In the year 2000, Brett Hull, then of the Dallas Stars, scored his 611th NHL goal. Now, the goal allowed him to pass his father, Bobby Hull, on the all-time scoring list, bringing him to number 9. How about that? Some father and son love there as Brett passes his father, Bobby, in the year 2000. In 2001, prosecutors in Miami, Florida, announced that they would seek a prison sentence if O.J. Simpson was convicted in his road rage trial. Now, jury selection began for the trial just after the announcement. So some O.J. Simpson trial news there. In 2002, how about this? The great one. The L.A. Kings retire Wayne Gretzky's number 99 in 2002. Alex, I know you got some more over there, don't you, brother?
Actually, just one more. Alan Trammell in 2002 was named Tigers manager.
Well, we also got some audio here. I'm seeing here in our. I guess you can say rundown. Also, Dean Smith announces his retirement in 1997. Do we have that bite? Oh, we don't have that bite. All right. What about Jeter? Derek Jeter, right?
In right field, Tarasco going back to the track to the wall. What happens here? He contends that a fan reaches up and touches it. But Richie Garcia says no. It's a home run. Here comes Davey Johnson out to argue as Jeter comes across to tie the game.
That was a Derek Jeter, the Derek Jeter fan interference that took place, I believe it was at 1996. Yeah, 1996, Mayer catches Jeter's home run. ALCS, I believe that was game one, right? Derek Jeter's homer in game one of the ALCS. Yeah, that was a big controversial moment in MLB history,
yeah,
right there.
And trust me, I mean, we've seen all kinds of interference moments. Who can forget the Chicago Cubs fan, you know, that interfered with the ball? I think it was, I don't know what outfielder it was, Carlos. Moises Alou, that's right, Andrew, our intern. Mm-hmm. Just told us. But yeah, I mean, who could forget the Moises Alou foul ball? We've seen it before, but considering Derek Jeter just step back from the game. Very relevant.
Yeah, it definitely is relevant. Definitely. Good stuff there. All right. Well, that wraps up our Throwback Thursday. 10 minutes left in the show. Again, folks, if you want to call in and discuss anything that we talked about on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, Alex, we talked about the Red Wings before we got to our guest for today's show. Didn't get to talk about the Pistons, as the Pistons, of course, started their exhibition season on Tuesday against the Chicago Bulls. Let's do a quick Pistons outlook, real brief here. Interesting stuff, because I read an article this morning saying that Will Bynum, Stan Van Gundy believes that Will Bynum has taken a step back and is now third on the point guard list for the Detroit Pistons.
How about that? Were you surprised?
I was a little bit surprised. I'm not going to lie to you. Brandon Jennings, of course, is definitely the guy when it comes to the point guard position for the Pistons. But DJ Augustine is another guy.
He looks good, man. Did you watch him?
Yeah.
I thought he looked really good.
But you know what? With Brandon, I mean, Brandon has always looked good, though. I thought Brandon looked good last year, to be honest with you, Alex. I mean, looking at how Brandon can score, he's definitely a scorer. There were times, though, when I felt as though Brandon Jennings certainly got frustrated down the stretch of games and felt a need, I guess, to take over a little too much and just would force up shots left and right down the stretch of a game because, frankly, nobody else is scoring. But Brandon Jennings, I mean, he's a talented scorer. He's very versatile. I think he's starting to buy in more that he has to become a facilitator on the court and get others involved, something that he kind of struggled with. He bought into it at the beginning of the year, but it sort of trickled down and kind of went out the window as the season went on last season. But yeah, Brandon Jennings, I think he's going to have a great year, and especially having a guy like Stan Van Gundy as your coach, I think that's going to do nothing but just sort of blossom him as well.
With Jennings, though, Al, he's a streaky scorer, but the real question is he a dynamic scorer? And what I mean by that is we've seen tons of great NBA scorers in the past. Look at Allen Iverson. You could even talk about Melo being a dynamic scorer. But the problem with them, Al, is they can't do any damage in the playoffs, one. And two, as much as they're scoring, it doesn't contribute to team wins. And I feel like for Jennings, that's kind of the problem I have with Jennings is that...
Well, what do you mean by dynamic, though? Dynamic
scorer. Dynamic is he a guy that, as a scorer, can lead a team to a victory and just be the leader of a team?
Well, when I think of dynamic scorer, I think of a guy who can score in multiple facets of the game. He can shoot the jump shot. He can take you off the dribble. He can drive. So that's where I thought you were going with that. But as far as leading his team to wins, I mean, that goes beyond his scoring. I mean, if you want to talk about leading his team to wins, he has to kind of take a step back in his scoring, to be honest with you. He has to become more of a facilitator.
Sure.
Get Drummond involved.
Yeah.
Get Monroe the ball. You know what I mean?
And we could talk philosophical all day about being a good scorer and not, but look at Gilbert Arenas, point guard, another great scorer. But at the end of the day, his team still wasn't good, regardless of all the times he was scoring. And for Jennings, I think you're right. He just needs to know his role in terms of when to score, when not to score. He's not shooting 20 shots and going 3-for-20 like we've seen at Milwaukee and even Detroit.
I think he will buy in. I think there's going to be a fresh start. I mean, and it comes down to good coaching as well. I think Stan Van is the right man to come in and handle this team. Now, as far as DJ Augustine passing Will Bynum on that list, though, hey, I'm definitely surprised. I mean, DJ Augustine is a guy who I frankly haven't seen enough of. I've seen Will Bynum's game, you know him playing for the Pistons. I mean, Will is a guy who can he's a spark plug off the bench. He was a spark plug off the bench for the Pistons last year as well. Who can come off the bench, get you instant points? How many times do we see Bynum hook up with Andre Drummond on countless alley oops? I like Will Bynum. But seeing DJ Augustine now become that second guy, maybe he didn't, you know, as far as his progression and getting better in the offseason, maybe that's something Will didn't do. Because, hey, ideally, Stan is calling Will out here, basically saying, yeah, Will is taking a step back, quote unquote. So, now, you know, interesting because looking at the starting lineup, Stan Van Gundy was sort of toying around who would he start before that exhibition game against the Chicago Bulls. And, hey, it looks as though Greg Monroe came off the bench. That is more surprising to me than this whole Will Bynum story because I thought, if anything, Josh Smith would be coming off the bench. But Josh started on Tuesday. I'm still not sold. And Stan is going to have to, you know, convince me along with a lot of other Piston fans out there that this whole tandem of Monroe, Drummond, and Smith can
work.
Is for
real, yeah.
I'm not buying it. I think, if anything, when looking at this move, just looking at this threesome, I guess you could say, Greg Monroe should be starting over Josh Smith, if anything, for me. Josh Smith is a guy who takes too many three-pointers. He was the worst three-point shooter in all of the league last year statistically.
But Al,
I don't get it.
Sure, I agree. But look, if you take out the way that he shoots threes and you're looking at just as a dynamic player or as overall skill, taking out the three-point issue, is Smith better than Monroe?
Yeah.
Right. So I think with Stan, he's going to talk. He's going to monitor that. And I think if Smith doesn't shoot those threes, I think it's the right call.
The only advantage, the big advantage that Smith has over Monroe is that he's more athletic. That's the thing about it. Smith is a guy, I mean, he's freakishly athletic. Monroe is more so a guy who's fundamentally sound down in the paint. And to be honest with you, though, Monroe has been more efficient than Smith the past two seasons. So I don't see why. And I was surprised that, to be honest with you, I was surprised that Stan Van vouched for Josh Smith so early. And he believes that he sees something in Smith. I don't know. He has to convince me otherwise, though. But the big thing for the Pistons this season, for Alex, and it has been a problem for 3 or 4 years now, is just the defense of the Pistons. The Pistons rank among the worst teams defensively in the league. They're lazy defensively. They give up way too many points in the paint, which you think will be startling, seeing as though you got what was being dubbed as the Twin Towers down low with Monroe and Drummond. But they gave up way too many points down in the paint, and they just took nights off. And that was the knock on Brandon Jennings as well. Sure, he can score, but he does not defend guards, period. And the Pistons, frankly, if they want to win, defense has to step up. I'm seeing that Stan Van made that one of his primary points of focus in training camp, which was great because it's certainly needed. I mean, Stevie Wonder can see that team needs to get better on defense. as far as the best new addition on the team, who would you say is the best new addition for the Pistons,
man,
Alex?
I got to go with Augustine, man. I think that...
Really?
Yeah, as much as, yeah, I know Brandon might be the guy and he needs to know his role. I mean, with Bynum getting back, you never know what can happen injury-wise. I really like Augustine, Al. I really think that watching him in the preseason, he's a playmaker. He's not like a Stuckey who's going to run and throw up shots in the paint. I think that you should feel very comfortable with your role players after if Jennings comes out of the game for the Pistons. And I don't know. I think you could even put Jennings at a two and rotate Augustine at the one.
I don't know, man. I'm going to go another route. I see where you're going with that. I think DJ, he could definitely come in and contribute right off the bat. Seeing as though they are really, I mean, as far as guards go, other than Jennings, I mean, it's kind of up in the air as to who that second guard is.
You're feeling the Lakers acquisition?
No, man. Yeah, exactly. Jody. Yeah. I like Jody, man. And that's another thing. Two of the glaring needs for this Pistons team was defense and three-point shooting. Yeah. They were terrible at the three-point arc. Jody Meeks is a guy who can come in right off the bat. He's shown and he can stroke it from deep. I like Jody a lot. I think he can be an instant contributor in that area. So look out for Jody. And also, probably the biggest new addition of them all is, you know who it is, Alex. Stan Van Gundy. Come on now. Stan Van invoking a new philosophy here, a new mindset. I love Stan Van Gundy. I've always loved him. I've been a fan of his.
That's outside the box, man. I was thinking only players there.
Stan is my guy. I like him. He's going to instill discipline. He's going to instill a winning mindset, and he's going to accept nothing less. He's a no-nonsense type of guy, something that the Pistons desperately have been needing for quite some time, going back to probably after the Larry Brown days. Andre Drummond's going to have a big year. Also, KCP, can't forget about Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I think he'll have a great year as well. All right, well, that wraps up the Thursday edition of this week's Current Sports. Again, catch Current Sports TV tonight at 10 p.m. as I sit down with one of the actually ranked number 3 in ESPN's 2015 high school basketball recruiting list. He's ranked number 42, I believe, nationally. He's unbelievable. 6'9", 200-something pounds. Yes, Trevor Manuel and his dad, James Manuel, will be joining me on tonight's show. They have a special announcement that is one that you're definitely going to want to take off your cap and tip it to. It's great stuff. Again, catch us tonight at 10 p.m. on WKR-TV. And if you miss it, yeah, we'll play it on Current Sports Radio tomorrow as well. So, great show. Want to give a shout-out to Kevin Richards, high school girls basketball coach over at Grosse Pointe South High School. Thanks a lot for joining me today, Kevin. As always, you've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic day. And be easy, people.